Nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
And I'll tell you something else, too, is I cannot stand sissies.
You're going to talk about wrestling, that's redneck talk.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show here at WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com. I'm your host, Carl Stern. Thanks a lot for listening to the show. We are here on Wednesday, June 15th, 2016, if you're listening to this at time of publication. It's been a little while since we've done a show, but there's a reason for that. I am hard at work recording up shows for the July Classic Wrestling Marathon next month, where we're going to have a show every single day the month of July, be biographies. The theme for this year is, very simply put, people who I was a fan of, who made me a fan of wrestling or kept me around as a fan of wrestling. Perhaps it's even people I became a retro fan of. Maybe it's their career was a little bit further back in time, but through either videotape or research or something like that, I became a fan of later on. And I'm over halfway finished recording those biographies right now. In fact, one of those shows is going to be a two-part show. So you're actually going to be getting an extra show, more than I'd planned on, because one ran a lot longer than I expected. I got to the so these are full-length shows, too, and I got to the stopping point, and I was only about halfway through this guy's career. And I realized I was going to have to do a whole other show on him. So instead of eating up another day and actually, you know, I guess, jipping you out of one biography, I decided to do a two-parter that day. So about midways of the month, you're going to have a day that's going to have two shows on it. And so let me clear a few things out of the way, do a little housekeeping first, since we've got so much coming up. I'm going to try to do one more show this month in the month of June. I'd like to get one more regular show done before then. Of course, the Dragon King Dark shows run every week, and there will be another one this week as well. So please check that out over at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. You can keep up with that. Plus, it should be on the feed as well. Let me explain technically. I've had some questions from more than one person lately about some technical stuff, and let me just kind of clarify, because we've got, I want to get this out of the way since I've got so much content coming up next month. Look, don't confuse what I do around here. I am about as low on the totem pole at WrestlingObserver.com as one can be. I produce a audio show, and that's it. I mean, I have nothing to do with feeds or whether it gets on the iTunes download or Downcast or whatever you use. That has got, you have as much control over that as I do. I have not even a clue how that works. I upload the show. I fill out a form that somebody else comes along and puts on the front page of the website. So if a show doesn't show up in the feed, or if a show doesn't show up on the front page, let me just ask you, don't waste your time emailing me, because there is nothing I can do about it more than you can. I understand it's Josh Nason, I'm thinking, seems like he's in charge of that sort of thing here. Of course, I don't think you can go wrong by emailing Tony. He's kind of, you know, the guy who runs the site, Brian as well. You know, one of those, if something comes up, look, every day in July, if there's not a show there, it's not because I didn't record one. It's because something in the process went awry. So, and things happen. Look, hey, you know, technology is crazy. So sometimes, and it's beyond my control. I mean, I have absolutely nothing. I'm not kidding when I tell you, you have as much ability to do something about that as I do. So if it rocks on in the late afternoon and there's no show up in July, or, you know, you're missing one or two on Downcast or iTunes or whatever, shoot Josh Nason or Tony an email. And their addresses, I think, are very simply like Josh at WrestlingObserver.com and Josh Nason at WrestlingObserver.com or what. I'm sure they're on there somewhere. But shoot one to those for technical whatever, because you know, I have no way of checking all this stuff. Like, I download all my shows directly from the front page. I don't even subscribe anymore through iTunes because of iTunes being so unreliable and so clunky. I just pick the shows I want to download from the front page. So if you do it through another means, it's very possible. I don't even know there's a problem. So please, I'm just trying to save time and whatever, because if you email me, it's possibly I could be at work or doing something else and not get that. And even if I do, there's nothing I can do about it other than forward that to the responsible party. So I'm just trying to save everybody a little time and headache if that were to happen. You know, hey, 32 shows in a month, there's going to be some hiccups along the way, and I'm just telling you what I can and can't do about it. So just file that away for future reference, and everything will be pretty great, I think. Okay, so we got a ton of stuff to get into in this show. Needless to say, since we're kind of abbreviated this month a little bit, I do have several questions in the email bag, plus several other things I want to talk about. One of the things that I've been asked to talk about, one of the things I wanted to talk about, in fact, I wanted to do it on the last show, I just hadn't had time to really look at it yet, was the new latest version of the wrestling game Total Extreme Wrestling. There's a 2016 version. It's the first version that's come out in a few years, and I have it, thanks to the good folks over at Grey Dog Software, which is where you find this, Total Extreme Wrestling 2016, and we'll be talking a little bit about it. I know there are some people that play the game that are on the website, and perhaps you don't, but it's more than just the game. Don't think you're going to get bogged down in some conversation about something you're not interested in, because we're going to talk wrestling history as related to that, because they have also, someone has also released a mod for the game called Death of the Territories. It's one of the most famous customization packs for this game. It's been around for many years. Someone has updated it for 2016, and it is a real-world mod pack for the year 1983. And so we're going to talk some 1983 wrestling. Where was the wrestling world at 1983? This was before Hulk Hogan became before the Hulkamania era. He was a year away from winning the WWF title. He wasn't even in WWF at this point. He was working for AWA. He was still a few months away from the Super Sunday show against Nick Bockwinkel for the AWA World Championship. He was working for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Bob Backlund was the WWF World Champion at this point. Vince McMahon was transitioning into taking over the company from his father. The territories of the NWA were still very strong. I was just starting to really watch wrestling and get into Southeastern wrestling and Memphis wrestling, CWA wrestling there. Mid-South was red hot, and just a lot of stuff, and we'll talk about that when we get to that section of the show. Let's go ahead and take one email, and we'll just kind of hit things as they come up here. This is from Juan. And Juan says, when did the idea of hooking the leg come into pro wrestling and why? It's one of those things that you never think about because it seems like it was always a part of pro wrestling, yet it really doesn't make any sense. The way the most guys hook the legs doesn't prevent the opponent from raising their shoulders off the mat at all. I know Gorilla Monsoon was notorious for burying guys that failed to hook the leg during pinfalls. Looking back at matches from the 50s, it looks like hooking the leg was not a thing back then. So it must have started at some point during the 60s and 70s. Well, the way they do it in wrestling, by hooking the outside of the leg, no, that doesn't do anything, really. You would have to hook from the other direction. And it is, I mean, if actually they hooked from the inside of the leg to the outside and rolled you back onto your shoulders, it would, you know, and maybe even hook the hands together then in a cradle, it would, you know, would hinder somebody from kicking out of a pinfall, and that would make sense. And you do see some people do that. But just laying on top of some guy and hooking his leg up the way they do a lot of times, you can roll back that way, but it's not very effective. But it's part of the story for wrestling. That's how you do it. That's how you you obstruct someone from kicking out. But actually, the hooking of the leg does go back a lot further than that. The photographs from the Frank Gotch George Hackenschmidt match from back in 1906 or whatever, whichever, I don't remember which one the photographs I'm referring to come from the newspaper show Frank Gotch hooking the leg of George Hackenschmidt during a pinfall attempt. And that's, I mean, clear as day, one of those photographs show that. There was, I think there was some leg hook attempts in the Joe Stecker Earl Caddick match from 1920, which was a shoot match as well. Again, you know, you got to remember that wrestling, professional wrestling early on, was a amalgamation between amateur wrestling and more of a theatrical pro style, where it combined a lot of those things. And so there were elements certainly to help you suspend your disbelief when wrestling did turn into a shoot. So hooking the leg really has been around for a while. It just became more prevalent, I think, during the time period you're sitting at. Now, look, you said the matches from the 1950s. If there's a hole in my wrestling knowledge, it is the 1940s and 50s and into the early 1960s. I'm just not that fluent in that era of wrestling, that kind of golden age of television stuff. Perhaps it went out of vogue for a little while and somebody brought it back. I'm not really sure, but I know hooking legs been around for, you know, ever as far as pinfalls. And you got to have to remember, too, that back in the Gotch era, all the way up into probably, well, you know, for Gotch would have been, Gotch died in 1917. After that, you had like the Stecker, Caddick era, that which led into like the Strangler, Ed Lewis era. You were talking about one count pinfalls at that point in time. Was it the standard three count we know of today? It was one count, just like in amateur wrestling. And three counts didn't come along till really the 1930s and 40s. And so I suppose probably then it became part of the storytelling was to hook the leg, try to keep the guy from kicking out. Because honestly, before that, there was no kicking out. If you just got a guy's shoulders pinned to the mat, just that was the goal, was to put the guy's shoulders on the mat, and that means you won. That's what it is in amateur wrestling. There was none of this laying there, you know, thrashing around business. If your shoulders touched the mat, you lost. So it was a lot different mechanics to the situation then. But that's a very good question, and I love, you know, the pioneer era of wrestling and talking about the pioneer era of wrestling, and we need to do some more of that. Sometime. Let's see here. This is from Dan in Pittsburgh. And this is kind of blowing my own trumpet here for a minute, but there's something in here to address as well. Dan from Pittsburgh says, just want to let you know that I ordered and received the Super Stern Stick, and I have to say I'm blown away with the amount of quality content I've received at such a small cost. I love the current Dragon King Classic Pro Wrestling series, along with the Dragon King Dark Show. They're both really up my alley, and I can't wait to go back and peruse all the older material that I have the pleasure of having at my fingertips. I opened up the PDF of the very first Dragon King Press newsletter and happened to find an article about the, at that time, new Governor Jesse Ventura action figure. I wanted to tell you that I actually found one of those figures at a local secondhand shop, still in the box. Absolutely had to have it. My dad and I loved to watch classic pro wrestling together, and one of our favorite things to do is listen to the combination of Jesse Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon on commentary. I was wondering if you have any particular memories of Jesse the Body during his time in the AWA, and if he molded his image after superstar Billy Graham before Hulk Hogan did, as Jesse claimed. Thank you very much for all you do to entertain and inform the fans. Look forward to the new venture you're currently working on. Thank you very much. Very kind. He sent along a picture of the Governor Jesse Ventura action figure. That's pretty awesome. I keep that around. Jesse Ventura's been in the news just this week. The lawsuit he had against the American Sniper novelist, late American Sniper novelist. Big award he won for the defamation of his character from the apparently fabricated story that the guy who was the American Sniper, you're probably more familiar with the movie than you were the book, but claimed he got in a fight with Ventura, who was disparaging the Navy SEALs, and beat him up. And it seems like that actually never happened, never took place. Ventura sued and won an enormous amount of money, over $1 million. Has now been overturned on appeal. Not sure at what point in time or where it moves on from here. Perhaps there's refiling of the suit or whatever. I'm not sure. I don't really know at what point it comes up after this. But Jesse Ventura, I don't have any memories of Jesse Ventura from the AWA because I couldn't get AWA television during that time period. I didn't live in that area and didn't have access to it and I think this was pre-ESPN days anyway. All I've seen is in retrospect, going back and watching stuff on video, YouTube, whatever, tape trading back in the day. But yes, I mean, most definitely, he took a lot of his act from Superstar Billy Graham, as a lot of other wrestlers did. I mean, Jesse Ventura, Hulk Hogan, Austin Idol, a lot of people borrowed very heavily from the Superstar Billy Graham persona, the tie-dye, the blonde hair, the evangelical preacher rap was Superstar Billy Graham's where he got it from. You know, Graham's book is really good. I think it gets dismissed a lot. It's not one of the books that I hear a lot of people talk about, but to me, it's one of my favorites. Really good book. And Ventura said, you know, he grew up a very fundamental evangelical Christian, and he got a lot of his rap and a lot of his interview style from those, you know, like holiness preachers and stuff. And that just and then Muhammad Ali, and he stole a lot of his phrasing and stuff from Muhammad Ali, and that got infused into wrestling ever since Billy Graham was a superstar, and people like Jesse Ventura. Ventura borrowed more from the look than he did the interview style. Ventura was great. I mean, look, Jesse Ventura as a color commentator, I'm appalled that he hasn't got into the Observer Hall of Fame. He was so good. He told you the truth, and that was the thing. I mean, he was so in the face of, you know, it was like Gorilla Monsoon would be sitting there and, you know, getting on the heels for doing something heelish and then not calling the baby faces out for doing the same thing. And Ventura just called him on his nonsense. Ventura actually, if you go back and watch all the Jesse Ventura stuff when he was, you know, really at his peak as an announcer for the WWE, he wasn't a heel commentator. He was a truthful commentator who just called Monsoon out on his nonsense. And was just, you know, and the thing about Jesse that made him so great about being an announcer was if Monsoon pointed out, see, they just cheated. You saw that themselves. More often than not, Ventura would go like, yeah, that's how you win matches. You know, what was his phrase? He used to often use, he would say, win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat. And that was Ventura's thing was, of course you're going to cheat. You got to win. You know what? If that's what it takes, then do it. I'm just calling out the hypocrisy of you not, you know, acting like the baby faces aren't doing the exact same thing they are, and I'm just calling you on that. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, and I think he was really, really good. And even early on in some of his WCW stuff when he first come in, he never had the chemistry with anybody in WCW that he had with Gorilla Monsoon or Vince McMahon in WWF. He certainly had no chemistry with Jim Ross in WCW, but he did a little bit with Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone humored him a little more. Ross, it was too straight. Ross was just all serious, talking about, you know, and honestly, going back, Jim Ross, I think, is the greatest announcer of all time. He's number one on my list. Well, he's tied with Lance Russell for what Lance Russell did. Now, Lance Russell could not do what Jim Ross did, and Jim Ross certainly could not do what Lance Russell did. So in their own different ways, they're number one on my list. But Jim Ross, I think, is the greatest announcer. I put him above Gordon Solie. I put him above anybody else down through there. He's number one. That being said, Jim Ross could be intolerable at times, especially during that early WCW era. I mean, it was all just – I mean, he come out of this very serious – Mid-South UWF wrestling, you know, you got over there and all you wanted to talk about was, you know, their college football record, their pro football record, their amateur record, you know, whose team they were on, who they played football with. And Jesse just couldn't get a groove going with that. And Jesse would crack some joke and Jim Ross either didn't get it or wouldn't respond to it or would just go on in his dry fashion. It was really, they had a terrible chemistry together. Tony Schiavone, who I think is one of the most criminally underrated announcers ever in wrestling. I mean, I put Tony Schiavone very high on my list of announcers. Tony Schiavone gets really vilified for the latter days of WCW when, my gosh, if you worked in the latter days of WCW, you would have given up too. You go back and listen to classic, you know, Tony Schiavone, and I don't even know why he was, you know, he used to get kind of demonized back then too in the newsletters and stuff, and I have no idea why. Tony Schiavone was a great announcer, and again, I firmly stand that he was one of the best, and you know, again, it's all subjective, but that's just how I'm saying it. He had a little more tolerance for Jesse Ventura, and then some of their stuff was a little funnier, but nowhere did he have the chemistry that he had with Gorilla Monsoon and Vince McMahon. And of course, I've said many times, my gosh, Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon as a combination, as a comedy duo, they are absolutely Hall of Fame worthy themselves. And I remember back in the day hating Gorilla Monsoon on commentary. He was just so slapstick, just so silly. And now going back and watching it with in comparison to what we got nowadays, they were great, especially Bobby Heenan. My gosh. And look, hey, I can't take away anything from Gorilla Monsoon either because he was so naive, I guess. And Bobby Heenan with his one-liners, he just had some of the best dry one-liners I've ever. Just a very comedic duo. Here is a question from Jerry, and Jerry says, "I've got a question topic I'd love to hear you talk about on the show. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how some of the territories treated their videotapes for TV. I know early on it was pretty commonplace to just reuse the tapes and not bother saving them. But I was wondering who some of the first territories were to start holding onto their tapes in libraries for posterity's sake. Who were some of the first companies to try and market some of their shows in libraries?" It's a great question, and again, you know, it was a technology issue that the cost of the tapes were expensive, and so a lot of times, yes, they did record over those. In fact, it was common practice. More places did that than didn't. I would think that, just looking back historically, I would say, well, what tapes survived? That would be a good place to start. Now, I think of three places off the top of my head, and I don't know their reasonings for it. I can't say that they were holding it for posterity's sake or holding it to make money or if that's just how it worked out. But I would certainly say that we have a pretty doggone complete library of Memphis wrestling dating back to like 1979 or so. You pretty much, with the exception of just a very few shows, you've got pretty much a complete catalog of that stuff all the way up to the end. So for whatever their reason was, whether WMC Channel 5 in Memphis just, you know, as a policy held on to their stuff, or if someone had the foresight to make a duplicate of all that, but that stuff's really good quality, so it looks pretty close to first-generation stuff that you see out there from Memphis. So, but somebody had the wherewithal to keep that stuff. So I'd say Memphis, for whatever reason, is one. The other is Houston. Paul Bosch, as we're seeing now with the NWA Classics Library, that's been released, being released for whatever reasons. They kept a lot of their footage as well. And the other being Florida. Florida Championship Wrestling from Florida seemed to have kept a lot, although we see very little of it. See very little of it come out. Perhaps it deteriorated. Perhaps it was just copies of that or whatever. WWF, I would say definitely one that kept originals. They had financially more power to do so. They weren't beholden to circulating tapes around an area the way that a lot of territories were, where they would literally didn't have the finance to send different tapes to different areas. And then the Memphis tapes were shopped around too. But for some reason or other, there's, you know, a lot of that stuff out there available from Memphis. So I would say those off the top of my head. A lot of your Portland stuff survives and was recorded because Buddy Rose had the foresight to tape a lot of stuff. He kept he was one of the first guys to really keep a lot of videotapes, one of the first early VCRs he had, and taped a ton of that stuff. Dave Meltzer has an infamous video collection on tape that, you know, was traded around, sent to him and whatever. So honest to goodness, there's no telling what he has in his vault that we don't even have out there in the market. Southeastern, a lot of that stuff doesn't survive. What has survived is just a random tape here and there that somebody off of VCR taped and made multi-generational copies of. The very little bit of stuff I have from like 1982, 1983 is terrible quality, but it's the only known surviving footage from that era so far that's come out. Georgia Championship Wrestling taped over a lot of their stuff too. It was common practice Mid-South as well. And unfortunate, but it was just the way technology was back at that point in time. All right, let's take our mid-show break right here. When we come back, might hit another question or two out of the mailbag. I don't know. But we're going to talk some 1983 wrestling by way of the take a look at the Total Extreme Wrestling 2016 game. And so we'll be right back after this.
Champion, and I will prove it, people. Send me any former champion in the back, and I will beat him. I don't care if it's John Cena, Kane, Jericho. Bring anybody out here, and I guarantee you I'll beat him.
You just had your chance.
Okay, we're back for the second half of the show, and want to quickly get in, remind people, the Super Stern Stick 16-gigabyte flash drive is coming to an end. You will not be able to get it after the end of July. The July marathon, if you don't order it before the end of that, you're not going to see it all collected in one place again. Again, I am working on a brand new project that has little to nothing to do with professional wrestling that I'm going to be beginning sometime in August to September. And so I'm moving away from this. This has gone about as far as I can get it. So between now and then, I'll just tell you a little bit for those of you who are interested. It's a 16-gigabyte flash drive, USB flash drive. Plug in any USB port you got. It's not locked. Doesn't require any type of special software. It's a flash drive like every other flash drive you see, 16 gigabytes, and it is full. I can't get anything else on it. I've had quite a few questions about people saying, will the biographies in July be on there? Will this be on there? Will that? I cannot get another megabyte of information on this stick. It is full. What is on there now is all that's going to be on there. I can't physically put anything else on it, it's out of space. This is the most I can get on 16 gigabytes. There will not be a new version. This version is the last version. I used to release these as single release, like you ordered a Stern Stick 1, you got a USB, like an 8 gig, 4 gig USB flash drive. That was Stern Stick 1. You wanted Stern Stick 2, you ordered another flash drive. You wanted Stern Stick 3, you ordered another flash drive. And those were $20 a piece. Well, a couple years ago, the price of flash drives came down very inexpensive. And so I decided to put all of them, all the content on one. I can get it all barely on one 16 gigabyte flash drive. So I have now released Stern Stick 6. So if you have a version before this and yours only goes up to 5, there is new content on this, Stern Stick 6. And so since a lot of people have the version that goes up to 5, I thought I'd tell you a little bit about what's on Stern Stick 6. Okay, the Stern Stick 6 folder on there has 2.3 more gigabyte of stuff on it. It has, let's see here, it has the Sin Lamente that myself and Mike Sempervivi did back in November of last year. That is a hour and a half long show. There is the SummerSlam 1992 review that got a lot of good reviews. It has all the biographies I've done so far up until next month's marathon. So there's like 50-something biographies on there, including last year's marathon and all the ones I've done since then. All these biography shows, Gene Kaniski, the Mongolian Stomper, William Muldoon, James McLaughlin, Frank Gott, Strangler Lewis, Lou Thesz, Jim Londos, Gorgeous George, Buddy Rogers, Bruno Sammartino, El Santo, Andre, Terry Funk, Superstar Graham, Bob Backlund, that become a huge show. People love that show. There's two Dusty Rhodes show, a biography on him, and then the obituary show when he passed away. Harley Race, Ric Flair, Lawler, Hogan, Von Erichs, Road Warriors, Four Horsemen, Vader, Ultimate Warrior, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, Goldberg, Steve Austin, The Rock, Ken Patera, John Pisick, and I've not ever released that show anywhere else, but it's on there. Junkyard Dog, Hurricane Ramirez, Lord Humongous, Midnight Express, Stan Hansen, Abdullah Butcher, Bruiser Brody, all those are your biographies you get on there. The Dragon King Dark Collection, all the Dragon King Dark shows I've done up to the very latest one, the one that came out last week, but that's the last thing I can get on there. That's it. There's some reading material there, a little bit, not as much as in previous Stern Sticks. There's a little bit of results on there, but it's really a very minor thing. There's quite a few question and answer shows on there. Topics like who's had the most matches ever, Iron Mike Sharp's death, the history of kayfabe in wrestling, Black History Month show, Canadian history. WrestleMania 8, we went and done that. It was a very popular show, Pioneer era stuff. The Batman Superman movie review that a lot of people have talked about even up to this day is on there. Talk about the Hall of Fame for 2015, the Observer Hall of Fame, all that stuff's on there. There's three storytelling shows that got a lot of positive feedback. The Art of the Promo, The Bullet and the Stud, talking about Ron Fuller and Bob Armstrong, and then The Monsters of Wrestling, all those are on there. So again, the Stern Stick 6 folder that is now included has 2.3 more gigabytes of data. So you get the entire run of the Dragon King Press newsletter in PDF form, including an audio file that goes along with each one. The Southeastern Wrestling audio documentary, which is over a couple hours long, audio is actually 2.5 hours long, audio about Southeastern Wrestling. Stern Sticks 1 through 6, there's over 500 podcasts, over 500 PDF files dealing with everything from old wrestling newsletters that used to be passed around back in the day, even before Dave come along. These were fanzines, were results from different areas, clippings and stuff. I mean, you know, it's a lot of stuff, a lot of stuff. $20 free shipping anywhere in the world, don't care where you're listening to this. I've sent these things to South Korea. I've sent them to Iceland. I've sent them to, Again, I don't remember if I sent one to Africa or not, but I've sent one pretty much everywhere else. Lots to Canada, lots to the UK, of course. Free shipping worldwide. It's $20. You can go to my website, DragonKingCarl.com, and place your order there, plus read about everything that's on it. Also, if you follow me on Twitter, at DragonKingCarl, there's a real easy way to do it. You just click on my link, my profile page, and right there in the link, you can just click it. That takes you straight to PayPal with the right amount and everything, and you click buy, and it's on the way. So I made it as simple to get as possible. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me, contact me on Twitter, and time's running short. It's about done for that. Okay, let's look at now something I've got so much enjoyment out of this game over the years, Total Extreme Wrestling. It's done by a guy named Adam Ryland, and Grey Dog Software is the place you want to go. Just Google that up. Grey Dog Software or Total Extreme Wrestling 2016. I had not upgraded my game since 2010. Now, all the way back, this game's been around for way over a decade, maybe close to 20 years this thing's been out. It's been around forever. Before this, it was known as Extreme Warfare Revenge, EWR. They changed it a good probably 10 years or so ago to Totally Extreme Wrestling. It's not a video game. It's not like your, WWE 2K17 or something like that. Nothing like that. No, this is a text-based game. It does have pictures. It does have stuff like that. But this is this is old school, what genre you call this. But you're basically, of course, he releases it with a fictional world that's got lots of stuff. And a lot of people enjoy doing that. I've messed around with it a little bit. But the game is super customizable. And so a lot of people release modification packs, mods, for this game from different eras. There's current real-world mods. These are all found, by the way, at Grey Dog Software. They have forums over there, just like we have the board. They have forums. Just go to there, and they've got a whole section on mods. Now, there is a learning curve to Total Extreme Wrestling. You're not just going to dive in on day one and start, playing this thing. It takes a little bit of time, and it's so customizable. You could, if you don't like something in it, go into the editor and just change it how you like it. That's the greatest thing about this game. It's so customizable. Now, you can start day one. Download it and start playing the fictional world data that's in there and, knock yourself out. It's not hard. There's no object to the game. You can do, you're a promoter. You choose a company you want to run, and you run it. You book matches. You hire stars. You deal with their complaints and issues and, people come into the game world and debut, people die, people quit, people, all kinds of stuff. To me, the most fun part is the real world data. And different people put together these packs, these mods, based on different eras. There's some from the 90s, there's some from, lots from current, what's happening right now. There's people that keep these up to date. I mean, monthly. If somebody gets called up to the main roster from NXT to WWE today, there's probably going to be a mod update next month that's going to reflect that. So, or you can change it in game, whatever. So, it's real addictive once you get into it. Now, I have zero to no interest in a 2016 WWE NXT TNA universe. None whatsoever. I do have a like, of course, classic wrestling is why I do this show. And the most famous modification pack, I would say, for that is called Death of the Territories. And I don't know who originally started it. I don't even know. No idea. It's been modified by so many different people over time. And it went for years where there was a new release of it. Of course, you could go in and do your own or whatever. And I've done that. I've messed around with the data to the point it's not even recognizable, but because I skipped a version, I couldn't import to the new one. And you can keep a lot of this data going through new releases and stuff, but I couldn't because I skipped a version, and it'd been 6 years since I upgraded the game. So, but somebody has released a new Death of the Territories, And it starts in 1983. And so I thought it'd be a good time. Some of you I've seen on Twitter, you're playing Total Extreme Wrestling. I've seen it on the board where some of you are doing it. And so I thought it might be of interest to you, but also whether you play the game or don't play the game or have no interest in the game, it's a good time to talk about 1983 wrestling, because that's really when I become a real big wrestling fan. I'd started watching earlier than that. I kind of always say like 1981, 1982 is when I got more and more into it. But by 1983, I was in hook, line, and sinker. And so this starts back then. And the wrestling world was such a vastly different place then. The Hulkamania era had not even begun. We were still a year away from Hogan beating Iron Sheik in Madison Square Garden for the WWF title, really ushering in that first big wrestling boom. Hulk Hogan was in the AWA at this point and working for New Japan Pro Wrestling. This was a few months. This mod pack starts a few months before Super Sunday, where Nick Bockwinkle, of course, it's on the WWE Network now if you've not seen it. That was the match that a lot of people thought Hulk Hogan was going to win the AWA title over Nick Bockwinkle, managed by Bobby Heenan, but that didn't happen. He did beat him, but he was disqualified and the belt given back to Bockwinkle. Of course, a lot of reasons why that happened that way, a lot of reasons why that took place, but in your world, if you want Hogan to win that belt and take the AWA to bigger heights, you can do that. Book it. Own the AWA. You can't do worse with it than what Vern did, right? So, Ruka, of course, I'm going to play Southeastern Wrestling. Duh. And see what's on there. So I've got it pulled up right now, and we're looking at like the promotions that are in there right now that start with that. And I've gone through, and they're look, hey, it's not perfect. I mean, it's this. There's a person here and there that's in the wrong promotion, but again, you can go in there and easily edit that. If you notice somebody that shouldn't be there, just go in there and delete their contract and put them where they're supposed to be, or they're under their own gimmick or whatever. But by and large, it's pretty doggone close to right. I don't expect everybody to know as much about Southeastern Wrestling 1983 that I do, so I went in there and fixed that up, and honestly, it wasn't that terribly bad off. But here, I actually have results. It took some work to find these, to dig them up. Actually, I got them of all places off the Super Stern Stick. They were in one of the PDFs of one of the old newsletters in there. I searched the internet all over the place trying to find January 1983 results for Southeastern Wrestling, and I couldn't find any. And lo and behold, I've been selling them for years now off the Super Stern Stick. If I just looked on my own stuff first, I'd have found it. But here's what's happening in the real world, January 1983, Southeastern results. This is from, let's see here. And by the way, this is very blurry, so you're going to have to bear with me. I printed it out on a piece of paper, and it's not as plain as I'd like for it to be. This is, let's see here. This is actually the end of December 1982. So since this starts in January 83, I wanted to get the roster done right here. This is the results from Birmingham, Alabama, actually on December 13th, 1982. So this will be your starting roster for Southeastern Wrestling. You had Norvell Austin beating Tom Pritchard. Now, Norvell Austin was at this point in time part of the Midnight Express, and they were not just the Midnight Express, they were the Midnight Express Incorporated. They were more of an open stable, and they would have other members. Wayne Ferris, the Honky Tonk Man, was in there at one point. The Mongolian Stomper was in it at one point. Ron Starr was in it there at one point. So Norvell Austin, at this point, I think, I'm pretty sure it was just the original three, Norvell Austin, Dennis Condrey, and Randy Rose, although I think Ron Starr was in it or about to be in it at this point in time. Tom Pritchard was just starting off, and though Tom Pritchard would later gain most of, I guess, his fame from the time he spent in Southeastern Continental, he was just a opening match guy at this point, a enhancement worker. He hadn't yet been pushed to that level. Second match on the show was Eddie Boulder beating Bill Ash, and Eddie Boulder was, of course, Brutus Beefcake, Ed Leslie. He was in the area without Hulk Hogan, without his, quote, older brother. It was listed as Eddie Boulder, but I'm pretty sure he was using the name Eddie Hogan. here because he teamed with Ken Lucas and they won briefly the Southeastern Tag Team Championship. Bill Ash, Southern wrestler, guy from Arkansas. He'd worked Memphis, Gulas. If you look under the in the dictionary under Greasy Heel, you're going to get a picture of Bill Ash. Wayne Ferris beat Robert Gibson. Wayne Ferris, of course, became Honky Tonk Man. This is right about the time he's becoming Honky Tonk Man. He's transitioned from being punk rock Wayne Ferris. He lost a match to Austin Idol where he had to stop bleaching his hair. He had to dye it black instead of the bleached blonde he had had before. And so he becomes Honky Tonk Man. A lady there named Linda Marks Keeble now, who later went on to promoting, gave him a jumpsuit because she said, "You look like Elvis. Here's a jumpsuit." And he started wearing it, and that's how that evolved. Just he always says a fan. She was a little bit more than a fan. She and her husband were involved in like music and stuff and did some sort of like production promotional work for the company. He's a little bit more involved than just a fan. The Mongolian Stomper Jr. beat Dennis Condrey by count out. And the Mongolian Stomper, Archie Goldie, the late Archie Goldie, was in the promotion at this point in time. And he was doing, "Hey, I've got a son. I'm trying to break into business." And, of course, they beat him up for heat. And that's the end of that. He was only around for a very short period of time. But this Mongolian Stomper Jr. was Tommy Lane. Tommy Lane later gets best known for being in the Rock and Roll RPMs with Mike Davis. He had been doing job work for Georgia Championship Wrestling and down in Florida as well. But here for a few weeks, he's the Mongolian Stomper Jr. Next match up is Mongolian Stomper. The original Mongolian Stomper beats Korsteya Korchenko by double countout. And I'd forgot Korchenko being around this early on. Like I remember Korchenko from Memphis and from, of course, UWF Mid-South. He was the fat, not too good Russian. But I had no idea he was around as early as 82. I guess he had been under that name anyway. Jimmy Golden, who was a babyface at the time there in Southeastern, beat Randy Rose of the Midnight Express. Says Bob Armstrong beat Tommy Rich by DQ, and I'm pretty sure that's wrong. Tommy Rich wasn't in the area. He hadn't come through the area that I know. I'm pretty sure this should be Johnny Rich, and it's just a typo because Bob Armstrong was heel at this point. This was the middle of the famous Bob Armstrong heel run. In fact, Bob is about to be badly hurt in that weightlifting accident, which caused him to have major reconstruction surgery on his face, almost killed him. That is right before this happened. So I'm pretty sure this was he beats Johnny Rich, who was in the area as a lower card guy at this point. Jimmy Golden beat Wayne Ferris, then Bob Armstrong beat Eddie Boulder. And Jimmy Golden beat Norvell Austin, then Bob Armstrong beat Jimmy Golden by reverse decision. So obviously this was some sort of tournament, although it doesn't. This little bulletin doesn't suggest what exactly for. Austin Idol was in the area as well, although he wasn't on this particular show. He was in the area, and so that's your roster you'd be starting out. Actually, here from this little newsletter thing, it actually says Austin Idol was outside the area for a couple weeks, and it was then announced that Bob Armstrong had beaten Austin Idol for the Southeastern Heavyweight Championship in Memphis. Mr. Olympia Jerry Stubbs returned to the area, and in his first match, he beat Wayne Ferris for the Alabama Championship in Birmingham. Wayne Ferris soon left the area. Norman Frederick Charles III won the vacant U.S. Junior Championship in a tournament in Dothan, Alabama, and said a rematch on for Dothan. The title was held up. However, Robert Gibson, of course, later of the Rock and Roll Express, became champion once again. Ron Fuller announced his retirement from wrestling after undergoing knee surgery for a third time. Of course, he did obviously come back quite a bit. The most recent injury occurred in a match against Bob Armstrong. So that's what you had going on there. So, you know, you could go all sorts of places with that roster. Let's see, over for the AWA, of course, you have Vern Gagne as the champion. You have in the NWA, you're in Ric Flair's first world title reign, so you can go all sorts of places from there. Harley Race is going to end up this. In fact, this takes place. This scenario begins is January of 83, where you have Ric Flair losing the belt to the Midnight Rider, Dusty Rhodes, down in Florida, and the decision's reversed. So in your scenario, if you want Dusty to keep the belt, you can do that. Also, that's the month where they did the deal down in the Caribbean with Carlos Colon, and the he as the World Wrestling Council world champion beats Ric Flair, the NWA world champion, to create the Universal Championship. So if you want to go somewhere with that, you can. In WWF, of course, Bob Backlund's the champion, and your roster there for the WWF, let's just see who's on the roster there. I know we got to wrap it up pretty quick here, but your contracts, where's the contracts? I lost the button. Roster right there, very top. Let's see, your guys you have on that currently work for the WWF as you begin this game is Afon Sika, the Samoans, Alexis Smirnoff, Andre the Giant, Arnold Skaalin, Baron Mikhail Cicluna, Big John Studd, Bob Bradley, Brian Blair. I thought Brian Blair was down in Florida at this point. Maybe he'd just come in. Bruno Sammartino, Buddy Rogers. Of course, he's doing Rogers Corner. Remember that. Butcher Vachon, Charlie Fulton, Chief Jay Strongbow. Jay and Jules Strongbow, your tag team champions at this point in time. That's right. I remember that now. Kurt Hennig is in. Remember, Kurt Hennig had that little stint there in WWF before he started gaining more notoriety. He was kind of working the areas. David Sammartino's in there. Don Morocco. Of course, he's in that big feud with Jimmy Snuka. This is right before the Nancy Argentina situation. So what's going to happen with that? Eddie Gilbert's in. Remember, he's an enhancement guy, the young upcoming babyface protege of Bob Backlund. Frankie Williams. Maybe you want Frankie Williams as your champion. George Steele, Gorilla Monsoon. Oh, gosh, the Invader. Invader won. Jose Gonzalez, he's up there that time. Iron Mike Sharp, Ivan Koloff's in for a little bit. Ivan Putski, Jerry Valiant, Guy Mitchell, who's known in some areas, Guy the Stomper Mitchell. Johnny Rivera, Johnny Roz, Jose Estrada Sr., Lou Albano, of course, Mac Rivera. Remember Mac Rivera? Jose Luis Rivera, as he was known there. Mass Superstar, Bill Eadie. He's up there. Mil Máscaras, Mr. Fuji, Pat Patterson, Pedro Morales, Ray Stevens, Rene Goulet, Rocky Johnson, the father of The Rock, SD Jones, Superstar Billy Graham doing the Kung Fu gimmick. He's back. Sweet Hansen, Iron Sheik, Tiger Chung Lee, Tito Santana, Tony Atlas. Maybe you do something with Tony Atlas. So all those are your WWF guys that you'll be starting off with there. So all kinds of possibilities. It's a super fun game. If you've never played the game before, look, 5 stars. Again, it's not something, look, I don't want to fool you. It's not something you're going to jump into and by this afternoon be neck deep in it. There's a learning curve, but it's worth the time. It's just and really most of the learning curve is the fact it's so customizable, and if you've ADHD about it like I am, you're going to get in there and you're going to go, oh, wait a minute, this guy's, you know, a lightweight and he should be a middleweight, or this guy is like, you know, he should be in Memphis instead of, you know, Southeastern. This, you know, stuff like that. If stuff like that doesn't drive you crazy because there's about maybe 15% wrong data in some of this and you got to go in there and change it, you can get moving pretty quick. There's tutorials about how to install these mod packs on there and the forums are all pretty helpful. Install the most recent update as they can become available in case you have any crashes or whatever. They do include updates pretty regularly. Keep a check on the forum for those. All right, let's get out of here. That's it. We'll wrap it up. If you want a Super Stern Stick, need to get it quickly, DragonKingCarl.com. I am at DragonKingCarl on Twitter. And we'll be back soon with another show.
He kind of told his own story. It's a new boss. What in the
tells a story.
That's right.
You know, Honky Tonk Man, he came way down here because he likes six. He likes six-man tags. He likes six eggs over easy. I like six filet mignon. I got six ex-wives. I love six. And I'm not going to stand by and let the Armstrongs change anything about that six man. They're not going to stop the Midnight Express from rolling, because the honky-tonk man owns part of Midnight Express, just like Randy Rose, just like Ron the Star. And we're not going to give up our possessions, Bob Armstrong. You know, there's something wrong with you. You're crazy. You're a crazy man, because a man's got to be crazy to put his two punk kids in the ring with three rough, tough wrestlers. And all I can say, Bob, is when we beat y'all, one, two, three, that's it. No more Armstrongs. No more three-man Armstrongs. It's just going to be Midnight Express, baby. Honky-tonking, bawling and squalling, climbing the wall. Woo! Man, it's still honky-tonk.